This is ground control to Major Tom. You've really made the grade. And the papers want to know whose shirts you wear. And I'm floating in a most peculiar way. And the stars look very different today.
Hello and welcome to Season 3, Episode 13 of Space Talks, a half-hour science-based show with an interest in all things space. I'm Stephen Lowry, along with co-host Tim Woods, who's on Vancouver Island. And hello, Tim. Tell us of today's topic.
Well, Steve, we were going to talk about quasars, and they're about the most energetic phenomena in the universe. However, we've changed our minds.
Well, that's right, Tim. And it's all because we're in a new year, and our astronomical sources are publishing their best of astronomical events of 2024. However, I hasten to report that late in 2024, the center of the universe, which is the public-facing part of the Dominion Astrophysical Observatory in Victoria, held elections to fill a couple of vacancies, and you, our very own Tim Woods, was elected to the board of directors. Congratulations, Tim. I trust you're excited about this opportunity.
I certainly am, Stephen. That's quite a send-up, and I appreciate it, but it's a great honor. And, you know, the center has this history of public-facing events and making sure the public has opportunities to enjoy and understand the observatory and its continuing role. So I feel like I'm hitting the jackpot here to be involved. So thank you, Steve.
We've examined a number of scientific journals and their top 2024 astronomical events and put together our own list. But first, Tim, I believe you've got an update regarding the fourth planet from the sun, Mars.
You know, when we started Space Talks, it didn't take long for us to pay special attention to Mars and the many efforts to go and explore the red planet. So it came as something of a surprise to me that the U.S., Russia, the ESA, India, China, the UAE, and Japan have sent probes of one sort or another, with some attempting to actually land a spacecraft on the surface. But the majority are conducting their research from orbit. So in something of an update, Steve, I've got a status report on the orbiting spacecraft that are still circling Mars and still carrying out research. Now, the oldest such mission dates all the way back to 2001, and that would be NASA's Mars Odyssey, which has done amazing work mapping the planet's surface. This spacecraft has been on the job for over 20 years with no chance of an oil change or a new battery. And of course, a couple of years later, in 2003, the European space agencies launched the Mars Express. Now, it's still serving as a communications relay for other Mars missions, but it's probably most famous for one thing, Steve, and that's the discovery of ancient water flows and subsurface ice deposits. Currently, there are seven spacecraft circling Mars, and in chronological order, they are the Mars Odyssey, which was launched in 2001, Mars Express in 2003, the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, that was launched in 2006, MAVEN, which was launched in 2014, the Trace Gas Orbiter, launched in 2016, the HOPE Mars Mission in 2020, and the most recent is the Tianwen-1 Orbiter, and that was launched in 2020.
You know, Tim, I did a little bit of research about this most recent probe and found out that the Tianwen translates from the Chinese as heavenly questions. And this one probe actually consists of six spacecraft subsystems, namely an orbiter, two deployable cameras, a lander, a remote camera, and the Zhurong rover.
Well, I know you love to find the origin of words, Steve, and I suppose that you have found out why the Chinese called the first ever Martian rover Zhurong.
Well, absolutely, Tim, and what a surprise that proved to be. The name was actually crowdsourced and is associated with the dual meanings of, quote, igniting the fire of interstellar exploration in China, and, quote, to symbolize the Chinese people's determination to explore the stars and to uncover unknowns in the universe.
I'm impressed, but I'm actually most impressed by the so-called HOPE probe developed by the United Arab Emirates. Now, its purpose is to study the Martian atmosphere and weather dynamics and to provide a comprehensive picture of the planet's climate. But as the saying goes, Steve, I bet you didn't have the UAE on your spacefaring bingo card. Now, it's true that the UAE did not build the launch rocket. That was provided in Japan by the Mitsubishi Heavy Industries people. And yes, that is the same company that makes cars and SUVs. However, the mission does reflect a great deal of research, equipment, and project management all being done by the UAE. And aside from the science, the mission is intended to inspire more engagement in the Arab world with space exploration.
And I understand that another surprising Martian entrant was the low-budget Mars Orbiter mission launched in 2013 by India. That mission is also carrying out a combination of research into the atmosphere and studying Mars' surface features. Now, in today's dollars, that mission cost a mere $73 million. That'll buy you just a few Tesla Cybertrucks. Indian Prime Minister Modi said that the mission cost less than the film Gravity, one of your favorites, Tim. And he's right. That Sandra Bullock movie cost $100 million and it never left the ground. Now, at the other end of the budgetary spectrum is the Trace Gas Orbiter Probe, which was a collaboration between the European Space Agency and Roscosmos, dating back, as you said, to 2016. It analyzes rare and scant elements in the atmosphere, and its budget, in today's dollars, is estimated to be $1.8 billion. The Trace Gas mission is ongoing, but notably the work is nearly entirely carried out by ESA, with the Russians having almost no role. And to that point, there had been plans for a second such collaboration between the two, but not surprisingly, that got shelved when Russia invaded Ukraine.
Yeah, politics in space, it's not usually a good thing. These six operational missions continue to carry out research and or serve as communication hubs to other missions. And to make this more of a current update, Steve, there are two new spacecraft heading to Mars in 2025, but they're actually only going there to get a gravitational boost, which will fling them off in a new direction to far more distant missions in the solar system. The next planned Martian mission, the next one to actually go there to stay, is called ESCAPADE. And that is, of course, an acronym, and it stands for Escape and Plasma Acceleration and Dynamic Explorers. Well, I'm sure you had that already figured out, Steve, which is the NASA-funded mission consisting of twin Mars orbiters. They're designed to study the planet's magnetosphere and atmospheric escape processes. Originally scheduled for 2024, the launch has been delayed to no earlier than this spring. And you can be sure that Space Talks will be monitoring that launch. So over to you, Steve. What update do you have for us this week?
Well, Tim, I think we'd be remiss if we didn't mention the Parker Solar Probe, which during Christmas became humanity's closest mission to the sun. And that reminds me of that old joke about trying to land on the sun, but waiting until nightfall to do so.
It's a good idea. So with regard to the name of that probe, I do know that calling someone a nosy Parker is derived from the inquisitive Matthew Parker. Now, he was the Archbishop of Canterbury back in 1559 to 1575, but that's not the name that we're thinking of. So for whom is the Parker Solar Probe named?
This space probe is named for the late Dr. Eugene Parker, who pioneered our modern understanding of the sun. Now, as a young professor at the University of Chicago in the mid-1950s, he developed a mathematical theory that predicted the solar wind, which is the constant outflow of solar material from the sun. Throughout his career, Parker revolutionized this field time and time again. And in 2018, he became the first person to witness the launch of a spacecraft bearing his name. Eugene Parker died in 2022 at age 94.
Quite the life. Okay, so a probe was launched to the sun in 2018. And yet it only came close 6 years later in 2024. 6 years. Meanwhile, it takes 8 minutes to travel to the sun at the speed of light. So what was the Parker probe doing for those intervening years? You must know that, Steve.
Without going into too much detail, Tim, after all, that could be a standalone episode. The spacecraft has been utilizing gravitational flybys of Venus to decrease its distance to the sun, enabling unprecedented close observation. It reached its first perihelion, or closest approach to the Sun, on November 6, 2018, during which time it became within 24 million kilometers of the Sun's surface. And at that time, this was closer than any spacecraft had previously ventured. The probe experienced extreme temperatures exceeding 1400 degrees Celsius with its innovative heat shield called the Thermal Protection System, made out of carbon. However, and here's the update, on Christmas Eve just passed, the probe achieved its closest approach, coming within 6 million kilometers of the Sun's surface during its 21st orbit. Oh, and by the way, in doing so, it became the fastest human-made object ever recorded by traveling at a speed of 700,000 kilometers per hour. And that's equivalent to traveling around the Earth 18 times in 1 hour.
It's my understanding that one major purpose of this probe is to uncover the coronal heating mystery. Can you tell us about that?
Well, Tim, counterintuitively, the Sun's outer corona is significantly hotter than its surface, and that's akin to moving away from a campfire and yet getting hotter and hotter. The mystery is simply, how can this be?
Do you have any numbers here, Steve? I mean, how can we understand this?
Well, the Sun's visible surface, which is called a photosphere, has a temperature of 5,000 degrees Celsius, and yet its corona, which is millions of kilometers further out in space, has a staggering temperature of 10 million degrees Celsius. Why this is so is the mystery. The Parker Solar Probe is scheduled to make 3 more orbits of the Sun, and yes, Space Talks will be monitoring. So much for updates, Tim, and here we are in the first light of 2025, and what better time than now to see whether the past year added up to much. Did we learn much last year, Tim? And of course, you're on top of this, right?
You bet. Well, sort of. Yes and no. There were some 31,000 astronomical papers published last year, and as soon as my people read them all and get back to me, I'll certainly know more than I do now. But let's be candid about this topic. If we're going to sum up that research that was completed last year, well, that's a tall order for the likes of Space Talks. If only our research budget wasn't stuck at $0 and no cents. Nope, but we're not giving up. We're taking advantage of some brighter lights out there who have taken a crack at the challenge. And well, they've picked out some highlights, and we're going to try to share those with you.
And we can't talk about them all. And the truth is, there's just far too many. So we've each identified a few favorites, and let's not waste any time. Go for it, Tim. Where will you start?
Well, how about we start with the oldest news possible? I love this time travel stuff. Never get tired of it, actually. Not surprisingly, a great many new insights into our universe came courtesy of the James Webb Telescope. Now, I picked the research that was carried out last year looking into really, really old galaxies. After the Big Bang, when things began to settle down, that's when stars and galaxies were being formed, and the Webb Telescope can not only see further into the past, it can determine just how old a visible galaxy must be. And this is done by analyzing the light emitted from the distant galaxy. The Webb Telescope is particularly good at this because it can detect very faint and distant galaxies, seeing light that has traveled billions of years, and then analyzing it with extreme precision. So, last year, researchers did in fact come upon a galaxy that is now known as JADES Jades-GS-z14-0, and it was determined that the light now reaching us from that galaxy dates back some 290 million years after the Big Bang happened. So keep in mind, the Big Bang was some 13 billion years ago.
And for listeners out there as curious as I am with regard to astronomical names, the complex name of Jades GS-Z14-0 is derived from James Webb Space Telescope Advanced Deep Extragalactic Survey. That's Jades. And the GS refers to Great Observatory's Origins Deep Survey South. Next, the Z14 signifies the galaxy's redshift or Z value. And finally, the O refers to its specific identification number within the Jade Survey Catalog of Subjects.
Well, I think we know why they use a short form.
Well, Tim, I'm going to try to match your old astronomical news with an item of my own, and it's the detection of population 3 stars, a term no doubt unknown to most listeners. Counterintuitively, population 1 stars are the newest stars and are highly metallic, containing heavy elements such as oxygen, carbon, and iron. And yes, astrophysicists deem elements heavier than hydrogen as being metallic. Population 1 stars, like our Sun, were generated by older population 2 stars, which are much lower in metals, consisting mainly of hydrogen and helium with few heavy elements. And this year, the JWST provided evidence of population 3 stars, the hypothetical first generation stars composed almost entirely of just hydrogen and helium. And this sheds light on the universe's earliest stellar formations. No doubt we're going to hear more about POP 3 stars.
Hey, I know we've had lots of excitement around the work of the James Webb Telescope, but let's not forget the Hubble. Last year, astronomers using NASA's Hubble Space Telescope made what I think is a pretty amazing discovery, detecting water vapor in the atmosphere of one of the smallest exoplanets ever studied. Remember that exoplanets are planets orbiting distant stars. This planet, called GJ9827d, is about twice the size of Earth and offers a glimpse into the possibility of a water-rich atmosphere somewhere else in our galaxy. And there's a really important role in this research for the University of Montreal. They had researchers on that project playing major roles. Two of their scientists played key roles, in fact. And here's a quote from Bjorn Beneke of the University of Montreal. "This is the first time we've directly shown that planets with water-rich atmospheres can exist around other stars," end quote. "This discovery is a step toward understanding the variety of atmospheres that are available on rocky planets." And Laura Creedberg of the Max Planck Institute for Astronomy called it, quote, "a landmark discovery," end quote, as it brings us closer to studying truly Earth-like planets. Bjorn Beneke added that studying planets this small could eventually reveal why atmospheres transition to being more like Venus or transition to being like Earth. This marks a major step in uncovering the mysteries of distant worlds.
And for star lovers, this next one from Australia is a winner. An array of 36 identical parabolic antennas called the Australian Square Kilometre Array Pathfinder, or ASKAP, have identified the slowest known spinning neutron star. Now, one may ask, well, what's so unusual about that? Well, the answer lies in the nature of neutron stars. You see, neutron star spin rates of 500 times per second are the average, with some reaching up to 1,000 times per second. Now imagine that, a star spinning 1,000 times per second. However, ASKAP this year discovered a neutron star spinning once only 54 minutes, challenging existing models of neutron star behavior, leading astrophysicists to speculate it may be part of a new class of astronomical phenomena, potentially linked to highly magnetized neutron stars or perhaps exotic astrophysical processes. Now, Tim, with regard to the incredulous, I believe you've got a big one.
The largest black hole ever was discovered tucked away in the galaxy NGC 1277. That would be about 220 million light years from Earth. And let me tell you, Steve, this thing is massive. We're talking about something that is 30 billion times the mass of our own sun. For perspective, the black hole at the heart of our Milky Way is called Sagittarius A star and is about 4 million solar masses. Compare that to NGC 1277's behemoth. That's like a pebble being next to a boulder. Now, you might be wondering, how did something this colossal come to be? Scientists believe that this black hole grew through a process that they call runaway accretion. And that's where it gobbles up gas, dust, and possibly even stars at an astonishing rate during the early days of the universe. Now, advanced tools on board the James Webb Telescope played a crucial role in spotting this Leviathan using gravitational lensing and other cutting-edge techniques. But here's the part that gets people nervous. Could a black hole like this swallow an entire galaxy? Rest easy. That's actually more science fiction than scientific fact. Now, while it exerts incredible gravitational pull, its influence is limited to its immediate neighborhood. In fact, NGC 1277 pull is surprisingly dormant, not actively consuming the material around it. This discovery isn't about fear, it's about wonder. It gives us a deeper glimpse into how galaxies and these cosmic events evolve.
We turn now our attention to further Hubble tension discrepancy, a term previously featured here on Space Talks. And before we go too much further, we should note that the famous astronomer Edwin Hubble came first before the Hubble Space Telescope, which honors his name. The term Hubble tension refers to the discrepancy between two measured values of the expansion of the universe. One set of observations uses data from the cosmic background radiation, which predicts the current expansion rate based on the physics of the early universe, and that value is known as the Hubble constant. The other method uses observations of nearby objects, such as type 1a supernovae and Cepheid variable stars. Observations from the JWST were hoped to narrow that discrepancy between what is observed and what is predicted, but the opposite occurred. JWST observations have become more and more accurate, suggesting the problem appears to be in the theoretical model of the universe. However, renowned Canadian astrophysicist Dr. Wendy Friedman, whom we also have mentioned on Space Talks, more recently stated that those calculations for the expansion of the universe depended upon which type of star was observed, and she and her associates are now recently observing red giant stars as a third independent way to measure distances. Dr. Friedman's exploration of these stars underscores her role as a leader in observational cosmology, pioneering innovative approaches to some of the most challenging questions in astrophysics.
From time to time, Steve, we like to give ourselves and our audiences something impossible to think about. What do you say? Is this a good time for that, to find an example from 2024 and the research into quantum entanglement? Well, here goes. Anyway, we'll give this a shot. Now, across the ocean, we know there is the amazing particle accelerator called the Large Hadron Collider, or LHC. And last year, they conducted some experiments involving quarks. And in this instance, something called top quarks. They are, in fact, the heaviest subatomic particles that we know of in physics. But they are incredibly short-lived. Almost as instantly as they are created, they decay into other particles. So, Steve, are we okay so far?
Yeah, I think so. The LHC collided top quarks at nearly the speed of light. So what happened?
Well, the scientists were smashing together these top quarks in their antimatter counterparts. And sure enough, the debris exhibited evidence of quantum entanglement. Listeners may recall that quantum entanglement is one of the strangest phenomena in science, at least in my opinion. Particles are so deeply connected that the state of one instantly affects the state of the other, even if they're far apart. But analyzing the pattern of how these top quarks and their decay products flew apart was clear evidence of entanglement.
Well, assuming their observations were accurate, what are the implications, Tim?
Well, first off, this is the highest energy example of quantum entanglement ever observed. And second, it gives scientists a new way to test what they call the standard model. And that's the rule book for how particles and forces work in our universe. And finally, it bridges the gap between two big areas of science: particle physics, which studies tiny particles, and quantum mechanics, which deals with the strange behavior of particles at very, very small scales. In simpler terms, this finding helps scientists understand the universe better, and it opens the door for future experiments, ones that might reveal more about the fundamental building blocks of everything around us.
Well, my last item for 2024 is something which didn't occur. A star in the Corona Borealis constellation did not go supernova as had been predicted. By the way, Corona Borealis means Northern Crown, and it's a bit trickier to find compared to something like Ursa Major, the Big Dipper. But it's a gem, indeed one of my favorites. Well, back to the star. T Corona Borealis, also known as the Blaze Star, is actually a binary star system consisting of a primary red giant which is losing its material to its companion white dwarf star. The blaze star can be seen only using a telescope and is classified as a recurrent nova because it experiences explosive increases in brightness by factors of thousands. And this happens when the white dwarf accumulates enough material drawn parasitically like from the red giant, creating a thermonuclear reaction on the white dwarf's surface. One such recorded outburst occurred in 1866, when the star brightened to a magnitude of 2, making it visible to the naked eye, and it went nova again in 1946. It's predicted that the blaze star will surpass the nova stage and become a type 1a supernova when the white dwarf's mass approaches the Chandrasekhar limit of approximately 1.4 solar masses. Now, since that didn't happen in 2024, the bookies are placing bets it will happen this year.
There's a lot of bets going on, aren't there? So my last one is that astronomers just caught one of the most jaw-dropping cosmic collisions ever seen. We're talking about a galaxy speeding through space at a mind-blowing 3,200,000 kilometers per hour.
Whoa. Oh, that's faster than my 1971 Duster with its slant 6 engine.
I think it is. Way faster, in fact. Now, and this isn't just happening anywhere, this speeding galaxy. It's going through Stefan's Quintet. You've probably seen it in pictures. It's this group of five galaxies that have been fascinating astronomers for nearly 150 years.
So that's the cluster of galaxies in the Pegasus constellation, isn't it?
Exactly. But now one galaxy decided to throw a little chaos into the mix. It's crashing through the group at this insane speed, and the collision created this shockwave. And scientists are saying it's like a sonic boom, something you'd hear from a jet fighter, but it's on a galactic scale.
So what happens in a galactic level sonic boom?
Well, for one thing, the shockwave heats up massive amounts of gas to just crazy high temperatures. It's so powerful, it could even spark the formation of new stars. Plus, it gives scientists this rare chance to study how interstellar gas behaves when it's slammed around like that.
So it's like a cosmic science experiment happening in real time?
Absolutely, exactly right. And the best part, astronomers caught all this action in stunning detail using the Webb telescope. It's giving them these insights into how galaxies evolve and interact. And let's be honest, Steve, it's just plain awesome.
You know, Tim, space just keeps one-upping itself. What a show today. And we didn't even mention two lunar missions occurring right now, nor the launches of New Glenn and Starship 7.
Well, we hope that today you've gained some insight into the astronomical highlights of 2024 in this past half hour of Space Talks, because, you know, we surely have. Until next time, this is Tim Woods.
And Stephen Lowry saying so long, and we'll see you next time on
Space Talks.
Mr. Spaceman, won't you please take me along for a ride?